Earlier this year, I went to the Big Apple to record a series of special reports about Czechs in the city, visiting several important Czech institutions and speaking to dozens of interesting individuals. Let's begin this special program about the Czechs of New York in what used to be the heart of the Czech community in the city, the Upper East Side of Manhattan. One of the remnants of that era is Sokol New York. The Sokol exercise and fitness organization began in Prague in 1862, during the Czech National Revival. Just 5 years later, a New York branch was opened.
Originally, it started down East 5th Street in Lower Manhattan, because the community, the Czech community, when they first arrived here, they established themselves on the Lower East Side, of Manhattan.
Ed Chilanda is president of New York Sokol's library and knows a lot about the branch's history.
However, the work was up here. Many of them were cigar cutters. Many of them came from the area of Cutnahora, where there was a tobacco industry too. And so the cigar cutting industries was uptown in Yorkville. So they moved, they migrated here, and eventually it was a trip to go downtown for the gymnastics, etc. So at one point they realized they would have to build a new building. They wound up buying their land here. This piece of land cost them $200. A little bit more today. And they put up the building in 1 year, and they had a subscription, and all these working people were not very wealthy at all. They struggled, and if you read the How the Other Half Lives by Jacob Riis, there's a chapter in there about the bohemian community in New York, and you can see that mom, dad, and the kids all worked rolling cigars very hard on a piecework basis.
And there would have been, I guess, tens of thousands of Czechs in this area at that time.
There were 40,000 at the high point, yes, 40, 50,000.
Tell us, who were your most notable members of the Sokol New York?
Oh, okay. Well, our first member, actually, one of the early members, is Walkall. He was a one of the first presidents, and he was an officer here, and he was very instrumental in setting up a national Sokol organization, that predecessor to the American Sokol organization. Another person that was of very keen interest is Joseph Nadelhans, because the Czech flag today is the flag that basically follows his design with one small change. In 1918, Masaryk was speaking at Carnegie Hall, and the Sokols all the Sokols, not just the Czech ones, but those Croatian, Slovenian, all the ones from the different Habsburg Empire areas, came and marched from this area here over to Carnegie Hall, where Masaryk was going to speak. And in doing so, they were going to pass the Plaza Hotel, and then he was going to review the parade from the balcony there. They needed a new flag for the new country, because the Bohemian flag, the old Bohemian flag, red and white, was similar to the other flags of Russia and Poland. And now with Slovakia, they wanted to make a new flag. So they added a blue triangle for the blue skies of Slovakia. And Joseph Nadelhans, who worked here at OU, was a member here at Sokol. He designed one with a triangle going one-third the length of the flag. And they hung it from the balcony at the Plaza Hotel, and the people marched by. I'll have to show you one of those photos later of that parade. And that's how that flag design started. Now, eventually it was officially adopted at half the length is the blue triangle.
When I visited New York Sokol, there were dozens of little girls of various ethnic backgrounds happily exercising in the main hall, while a small women's group were limbering up. Among the latter were two of Sokol's leading members.
I'm Norma Zabka, or Norma Zabkova. I'm president or starosta of Sokol, New York.
And I'm Irene Mergel, or Irena Merglova, and I am first vice president at Sokol, New York, and I teach the women's class.
And how long, Irene, have you been a member of Sokol?
Since I was 5.5 years old.
And yourself, Norma?
Four. 4 years old.
And how long does your family connection with the organization go, do you know?
Well, just in the, when we had an archivist here from Prague several years ago, I found that my grandfather was one of the early members of Sokol New York. So it goes back to my grandfather, and I could be a great-grandmother myself.
What about you, Irene?
Well, we lived two doors down from Sokol Hall, so it was a rite of passage at age 5 and a half to become a member. My father was a member in Czechoslovakia, and I'm first generation, so it was an automatic thing for me to go to Sokol. There was no question about whether I wanted to or not.
Of the kids who are here now, there's a group of kids, a group of girls exercising out here. How many of the kids here would be from a Czech background, you know, roughly?
I would say it's almost nil. When they register in class in September, on the application it asks whether or not there is anyone from Czechoslovak descent. And Norma went through the application just recently, and we discovered there are a few whose grandparents or great-grandparents were of Czechoslovak descent. So it was Norma's idea to get this group together so we can form some kind of a group that would help us to retain the Czechoslovak heritage.
And do you think it's a bit of a pity that there aren't so many Czechs here anymore?
Well, it's because the neighborhood has changed. Originally, when this building was built, it was all Czechoslovak neighborhood. As a matter of fact, I couldn't speak English before I went to school, so it wasn't necessary in this neighborhood. And then as the UN came in and changed the whole east side, and buildings were torn down and high-rises were put up, the Czechoslovak community, like other communities, like the Hungarian and like the German community, moved out to the suburbs or moved to the outer boroughs of Manhattan. So very few are currently in the city.
What do you think? You've both been members for many decades. What has Sokol given you over the years, Irene?
Well, first of all, it gave me a husband. I don't know how to describe this, but a fulfillment that is indescribable. It's a part of my life, a big part of my life.
Sokol, New York is on East 71st Street. A stone's throw away on East 73rd Street, you'll find the Bohemian National Hall, which is now home to the Czech Center, the Consulate General, and other institutions, and is the pride of Czech New York. The fine five-story building was officially opened just over 2 months ago, after a long renovation project. The few times I was there in April, much of the Bohemian National Hall still resembled a construction site. But on one floor that was more or less finished, I met Joseph Balázs, the head of the body that oversees it, the Bohemian Benevolent and Literary Association. He told me why 80 or more Czech groups had come together to form the association way back in 1892.
It was just a simple sort of act of putting together these existing organizations under one sort of management. And the general purpose was to collect money and build this building, Bohemian National Hall, in the same fashion that the National Theatre in Prague was built.
But the original name was the Czech Benevolent and Educational Society. What were the educational activities?
That's correct. I mean, this was the center of the Czech community of maybe over 30,000 people living in a neighborhood. And what it did was that it was teaching pupils English. At the same time, they were maintaining Czech and Slovak languages through classes and things like that.
Today, what does the BBLA do?
Currently, it still functions as an umbrella organization, but not for 85 organizations. The number is much smaller. There are nine active organizations. One of them is Sokol, for instance. Then we have a group that functions as the American Fund for Czech and Slovak Refugees. Currently, it supports students. And then we have an organization that promotes Dvořák's music. Then we have sports organizations, etc., etc.
The body that promotes Dvořák's music is called the Dvořák American Heritage Association. Their room at the Bohemian National Hall was only half finished when I stopped by on a sunny Saturday morning. My host, the association's Dr. Susan Lutzak, told me about the great composer's connection to New York.
Antonín Dvořák was brought here by Jeanette Thurber in 1892 to encourage American composers to create their own American music rather than look toward Europe for musical inspiration. So Dvořák was the director of the National Conservatory, and he listened to the music and the sounds that he heard here in America. And at the time, he was impressed by music of black Americans. These were called Negro spirituals at the time. He also went to Spillville, Iowa, where he heard music of Native Americans. And it is these sounds that very much impressed him, and he incorporated the spirit of these of this music, of these sounds in his works. In the house on East 17th Street, he composed masterpieces including the New World Symphony, the American Quartet, the Biblical Songs, and other masterpieces.
You're listening to Radio Prague and to a special St. Stephen's Day program dedicated to Czechs in New York. Those interviews we have just been listening to were all recorded in Yorkville on the Upper East Side, the former heart of the Czech community in New York. Now let's take the N train out to Astoria in Queens, where a lot of Czechs moved to from Manhattan. Perhaps the center of the Czech community in Queens, Astoria, is the Bohemian Hall, which is run by the Bohemian Citizens Benevolent Society. Every Friday during the school year, children travel to the Bohemian Hall from around New York and even further afield for Czech lessons. When I visited, I first met some parents waiting outside.
The teachers are wonderful. We are really happy with the quality of teaching. They are good with the children. They're really gentle, understanding.
You were telling me that you speak Czech at home. You make your kids speak Czech. Mm-hmm. Do your kids speak better than some of the other kids here?
You mean Czech? Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, they speak good for their age, I would say.
Do you have trouble motivating them to come here after school? It's Friday, 5 o'clock.
No, not at all. No, especially my daughter loves it.
There are certain advantages, mainly that it's, for us, it's inexpensive. It's a good opportunity to meet other children, but I think it would be, because the community is so small in New York, I think that it would be ideal if the groups were divided much more according to ability, and they just don't have the possibility of doing that. It's a little bit like being in a one-room schoolhouse in some ways.
What about the other aspects apart from language teaching? What does your kid get out of the cultural side of things?
Well, I think she learns some songs, and I think she learns how to sing the anthem, and sort of has a sense that there is a place to which there is a family connection.
How do the children themselves find their Friday evening Czech lessons? 7-year-old Kuba told me all about them and the secrets of learning Czech.
There's about 7 people in like the big grades, but in the lower grades there's like 15.
Is it a fun class or is it more like hard work?
Actually, it's very fun and you hardly do hard work. It's like just basic stuff, like the parts of speech.
And do you watch Czech DVDs or Czech videos or read Czech books?
Well, actually, my DVD player can't play Czech DVDs, but like whenever I have the chance to watch Czech films or something, I always take it.
And do you understand everything when you watch a film?
Well, pretty much, but long words I don't really understand. Then I need to ask my parents. My mom, actually.
Are both your parents Czech?
Actually, no. My dad is, he's an immigrant from Mexico, but my mom, she's from the Czech Republic.
So you speak Spanish as well?
Not much. Just like 2 words.
And do you prefer Czech to Spanish?
Yes, I prefer Czech because Spanish is hard to learn.
But I thought Czech was very difficult. Czech is hard for me.
Well, like, if you have, like, Czech in your blood, then, like, you really know. But if you don't have it in your blood, it may be a little bit harder. No offense.
What advice would you give me for learning Czech?
Well, some advice I would give you is to, like, get a Czech dictionary or, like, they sell, like, these English Czech translator books. Yeah, so I would advise you to get those. And if you have, like, you can take lessons from Czech people.
Lessons at the Czech school are free for all children of Czech and Slovak descent. The school is funded from the profits of the Bohemian Hall's extremely popular beer garden. It draws huge crowds from all over New York.
Bohemian Hall first opened well after the Bohemian Citizens Benevolent Society was established. The land it's built on was donated by a farmer, I believe, of Czech descent. And the society first intention was to build a school and a gathering place for Czech people.
Lizanne Fluxman is assistant general manager of the Bohemian Hall and Beer Garden and is herself of Czech descent.
Their hopes were to give the Czech citizens that had now migrated to the United States a place they could educate their children and also to help them to be good, responsible American citizens and to represent their culture in a positive way to the American society.
How was the building funded?
A lot of the funding came directly from the immigrants themselves. They built themselves, they didn't hire people, and they donated any goods or materials needed to do the projects.
Also, I believe not long after this place was opened, America introduced a ban on drinking with prohibition.
Yeah, I'm sure some of the earlier members thought it was kind of doomed because just as the beer garden had reached completion, prohibition came into being and it wasn't legal to have alcohol served.
Prohibition, of course, ended 75 years ago and many things have changed since then, including the profile of visitors to the Bohemian Hall pub and its adjacent beer garden, both of which have been run since their inception by the Bohemian Citizens Benevolent Society. General Manager John Argento says the clientele isn't as Czech as it used to be.
Especially in the summertime, the percentage goes way down because Astoria has been changing over the last 5 years. It's a lot of young, I guess what we call yuppies, upwardly mobile people who moved here because of the cheaper rents, a lot of students, and it's just a whole new population for Astoria, which was formerly like some Czechs and a lot of Greeks. But we're finding that it's young people with their first jobs, a lot of college guys who are just starting out, and this is a great neighborhood. We're also getting a lot of people, because of the popularity of Bohemian Hall, they found out about it. It's like a gem. There's nothing like it in New York City. We actually get people coming in from all over Manhattan, from Brooklyn, from all the boroughs, because there's just nothing like it. You know, real estate is so expensive in Manhattan that in New York City, that something like the Bohemian Beer Garden just economically doesn't make sense to exist anywhere else. But here it does because it's owned by the society.
As well as visiting Czech institutions in New York, I also had the pleasure of meeting many extremely interesting individuals. Among them, the renowned photographer Antonín Kratochvíl, who had an amazing life before ever picking up a camera. Coming from a family persecuted by the communists, Kratochvíl escaped from Czechoslovakia in 1967 at the age of 19.
Well, I was already thinking about it since I was 15, actually. I was really kind of getting really more depressed and depressed. And finally, I just, I saw opportunity. And I did. I left, yeah.
You were then in a refugee camp in Austria. What was that like?
It was tough going. It was you had to always fight for your life, kind of, you know, always being on your toes because there was a lot of animosity, you know, a lot of ethnic kind of problems. My bratranet, how do you call that actually? Cousin, yeah, I was killed in that camp, in Trieste camp. He was killed by the Albanians. Yeah.
After that, you ended up in Sweden where you were put in prison for a while for drug smuggling, soft drugs. You then ended up traveling around Europe, no papers.
It was never proven actually. You know, I mean, I was convicted on a testimony of somebody else completely, so, you know.
In any case, you found yourself with no papers, traveling around Europe. In France, they basically, from what I've heard and read, they gave you a choice, go back to Austria to the camp, or go to the Foreign Legion. You chose the latter.
That's right. I mean, I was actually in prison down in south of France for being in country illegally, because I got stopped by the police and they asked me for my papers, which I didn't have, so they of course have to arrest you. And then this guy came about, and that's the choice I had to make. Yeah.
For me, the French Foreign Legion is always a kind of image of horror, that it's something I could never survive. How hard was it?
I mean, I lived through some hard times before that, so for me it was not, and I was really in a good shape, so it was not really that hard. But just the obeying, the being, they try to break your will, they try to just make you a fighting machine out of you, and that's I resisted that, I think. So then in the end I have deserted, yes.
This was after you were injured in Chad, was it?
Mm-hmm. During the campaign, 1969, I was injured, and I was rotated back to Marseille, to Saint-Jean, the fort, and from there I escaped from the fort.
Another thing I've always believed from my childhood, that if you desert the French Foreign Legion, they come and get you, they find you.
For the first 48 hours they look for you, the Legionnaire, the police, and then they give it to the civilian, the French police. But by that time I was already in Belgium, and I crossed legally to Holland, where I got the refugee status and political asylum.
The photographer Antonín Kratochvíl. The film director Wojciech Jasny had even more incredible stories, including tales of working for the resistance during World War II when he was a teenager. Jasny also had personal insight into the personalities of two Czechoslovak communist leaders, Antonín Novotný and Alexander Dubček. He told me the former protected him from the secret police, while the latter allowed him to make the somewhat anti-communist film All My Good Countrymen.
Antonín Novotný, our president and secretary then of the Communist Party, he was in the time of Second War in Mauthausen. It was a terrible death camp. But Czechs had their specialty. There was a Lagerschreiber who was friend of SS, but he was a communist, so he helped all Czech and especially communists. Serva, I made this film written by Jarisch, was also a survivor of this, and very good writer. So I made this film as my greatest European film with all nations. And Novotný loved me because of this film.
What film now are we talking about?
I am talking about I Survived My Own Death, the film by Milan Jarisch, screenplay, and I made this film cinematically with my great cameraman Jaroslav Kučera, and it is one of my best movies ever. And Novotný loved this film. Then when he became president, later came the situation that I needed Verich. Jan Verich was banned to act because he talked on the stage against the party. So came to it that Novotný, I had asked to President Novotný to make him free. And he did it for me.
And can you please tell us about Dubček and the making of All My Good Countrymen, which you had written years previously?
I owe him everything. When he became chief of the party, he was with Brezhnev in the political school in Moscow. They were friends, and Brezhnev thought he will obey him. But Dubček joined us, this human face, and he was really, really for it. And he called me himself on the phone and said, "Now, Jasny, you can make your film, and you get everything for it, and now you do it." I waited for it 12 years. It was Dubček. I owe him my film. But to Novotný, I owe my life. That's how it is. It is not so simple with communism. They were also humans.
Communism shaped the most recent book by the Prague-born children's author and illustrator Peter Sies. It's called The Wall, Growing Up Behind the Iron Curtain. At his office in Soho, I asked Sies if The Wall was hard to write.
It is hard because I get angry now thinking about things which I didn't get angry because when I was a child or when I was a young man, you take it for a fact that some things which are so stupid and so ridiculous, you just know that's the rule and you sort of follow the rules. At the same time, I feel sort of embarrassed by the fact that when we were into rock music and we would go drinking and talking about Led Zeppelin, there was this whole group of dissidents with Václav Havel, which we thought, oh, these guys are pathetic. They were like these actors and all that. And then I somehow also got memoirs of my friend who played with plastic people of Yuri Vers, Mela Hlavsa. And I had tears in my eyes because he, really the book is about him being sort of working class guy who just wanted to play rock music and wanted to grow long hair. And by all these circumstances and the rules, when he didn't fit into the system, he became sort of the political hero, and sort of they tortured him to the point that he died at age 50. So all these things make me angry now, but they didn't make me angry then. And I'm sometimes surprised to people from my generation who say, oh, it wasn't such a big deal and we had a great fun and don't you remember you were in love with this girl when you were 19? But it sort of reminds me of the stories of Czech writer Arnoš Lustig, who was in Auschwitz at age 16, 17, and then he would fall in love. But it doesn't mean it's a wonderful thing to fall in love, but it's not the right thing to be in Auschwitz to fall in love. So there is a Czech expression when people say, didn't we have fun too? I always say, like, but it was jako sranda v márnici, which would be like fun in the graveyard or something.
The writer Peter Sees, bringing us to the end of this special program featuring some of the many Czechs in New York I had the pleasure of meeting earlier this year.